This is ESPN Radio.
In life, as fans, we're allowed a 24-hour period after a big win or a big loss. Now, it's time to get back to work here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. You can join us and be a part of Canty and Golic Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line by hitting us up at 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. ESPN Nation's presented by Dr. Pepper. College football's heating up, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. Got a lot going on Tuesday after a long NFL weekend. We had Monday Night Football last night. We got top five, bottom five from the NFL weekend it was. We'll talk to Dan Orlovsky, Jason Fitz, Bob Valvano's. We got college basketball and the college football playoff rankings coming out tonight. We got all that on the docket, but Chris, much like this time last week, we got to clear out and call ISO because Aaron Rodgers decided to talk again. And boy, oh boy, Chris, that still worries me every time I hear it now.
And Aaron Rodgers is like a gun, like Jason Tatum when he's got the ball for the Boston Celtics. They just don't want to pass it. Like, he just wants the news headlines to be dominated by what he's got going on, man. And it's unfortunate because we've got a lot to react to off of week 9 in the NFL, especially a heck of a matchup last night, Monday Night Football between the Bears and the Steelers that went down to the wire. But like you said, we got to talk about Aaron Rodgers because Aaron Rodgers decided to yet again address the media, and what he said was cringeworthy. Like, at this point, I'm wondering if State Farm gets the discount double check on the rate that they actually pay Aaron Rodgers to be one of their representatives, to be one of their spokesmen, because they can't like what's going on and what's coming out of his mouth right now.
As my friend Trey Wingo once said, there will be lawyers, I'd imagine, in that spot. But Chris, you mentioned, someone asked me this morning, I was on with our friends in ESPN Milwaukee, Jen Latta, and the folks at Jen, Gabe, and Chewy out there, and they asked me, if you were Aaron Rodgers, because we knew he was going to come up, we'll play you the sound, he was on with Pat McAfee earlier, and there was something in the way of an apology here, but Chris, they asked me if I could give Aaron Rodgers any advice right now, what would it be? And I said, point blank, it would have been to have not gone on and talked about this anymore, but that's been the MO for this entire offseason for Aaron Rodgers, so I couldn't expect any different here.
Yeah, he can't help himself though, Mike. I mean, this guy is a classic narcissist. It has to be all about him, and if it's not about him, he'll find a way to make it about him. So I'm not surprised that Aaron Rodgers yet again comes up with something that doesn't pass the smell test, that doesn't necessarily feel like it's acceptable in the way of an explanation or an apology, because that's just who this guy is. Like, we have enough evidence. He's been in the league since 2005. We have enough data points to realize who Aaron Rodgers is and who he's not. And I'm not surprised that when he addressed the media again today that we were going to get something along these lines, something that sounded like an apology, but that was not quite an apology. And for me, it's just not good enough. Like, the best thing that Aaron Rodgers could have done to help himself is take a page out of Bill Belichick's book, which is, we're on to the next game. In this case, we're on to Seattle.
Yes, because ultimately, what we saw this weekend with Jordan Love reminds us he is still overwhelmingly the answer to the question of which Packers quarterback will lead them potentially to a Super Bowl this season, because it ain't going to be Jordan Love. So this was Aaron Rodgers earlier on the Pat McAfee show when asked about the division caused by his comments last week relative to the COVID-19 vaccine.
I'm an athlete. I'm not an activist. So I'm going to get back to doing what I do best. And that's playing ball. I shared my opinion. It wasn't one that was come to frivolously. It involved a lot of study and what I felt like was in my best interest for my body. But further comments, you know, I'm going to keep between myself and my doctors and about any of those things after this interview.
Chris, that sounds like a guy who was not ready for the reaction he got here, which I feel like in a lot of ways, in addition to being disappointed by a lot of the misinformation that Aaron Rodgers had put out there. And you can go to the CDC website if you want to find out just what specific things Aaron Rodgers was wrong about there. But he talked about his opinions. There was also a lot of judgment in there, Chris, of the woke mob and of cancel culture and of all the weirdo name-calling that's become such a unique part of this conversation.
Let's not forget witch hunt, too, right?
Yes, yes,
I mean,
the witch
we know
hunt.
How politicized the vaccine is, and I think Aaron Rodgers did nothing but fan the flames when it came to that conversation. So he knew all of the highlights to hit on when having this conversation to other people. And, you know, listen, people are going to take sides on this one. Lines have been drawn in the sand and folks fall on one side or the other. There is no both sides to this thing. And Aaron Rodgers, based on his position and not being vaccinated, knew exactly what to hit on in order to frame this as him being a victim, when in reality is he thought he was above following the protocols that the NFL had set forth. Now, is there, you know, culpability on the behalf of the Green Bay Packers and the league office? Absolutely, because they're the ones that should be the first line of defense. They're the ones that should be enforcing the policy. But the fact that they didn't just exacerbates the situation that already looks really bad for Aaron Rodgers. Now it's the NFL and it's the Green Bay Packers as well. So, I mean, this is going to ultimately end up much ado about nothing, because it sounds like the league is not going to suspend Aaron Rodgers. It's just going to be a fine for him and potentially a fine for the club as the discipline that they're going to dole out. But, I mean, as far as Aaron Rodgers is concerned, like, his reputation is going to take a hit, and deservedly so, because he knowingly misled the media, the fan base, about his vaccination status, and there's no way to get around that.
Yeah, Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. I thought that was a really interesting part of this interview from a perception standpoint, because you're right. The notion that Aaron Rodgers is being canceled here. He will likely start for the Green Bay Packers this weekend, collect a multi-million dollar weekly paycheck, and keep things moving with his life. He's going to be A-OK here. He has not been canceled in any meaningful way. May he lose out on some advertisements? Sure, but we all got to take accountability for our words at some point, and that's kind of what it looks like. But Pat McAfee and A.J. Hawk did ask him about something I thought was interesting. They mentioned, they said to him, you know you're not going to win the MVP ever again at this point, right? That the people who vote for this award are no longer going to look at you like that. They asked him about, did he think he was going to get the same reaction at home this weekend when his name is announced at the end of the offense being introduced in Green Bay? And I don't think the reception is going to be any different up there, Chris. I think he is a made man in Green Bay and is going to continue to be for a long time based on what he's done on the field this season and in many before that. But the perception, I think, is going to be altered in a lot of ways from here on out when it comes to some of the public accolades. We're still going to go back to being in awe of Aaron Rodgers, the football player. It's impossible to ignore, and God, we've done it in far more egregious cases of off-the-field impropriety than with what Aaron Rodgers has done here. But I think in some of those instances, they're probably not far off in the way he's going to be perceived now.
No question about it. And Mike, you and I might be a little bit different in terms of how we view Aaron Rodgers, just because we've played with some guys that aren't necessarily the best in terms of character, yep. And yet we're able to find a way to be able to separate the two, the person that's on the football field versus the person that's in the locker room or out in the community. Like, there's a difference, right? We understand that. Like, if this guy can help me win, like, ultimately, you know, I'm going to try my best to be a good teammate, and we'll be willing to accept that from that player. But the average fan doesn't understand that.
Nope.
And so I can understand how, from a PR standpoint, his reputation is going to take a little bit of a hit. And dare I say, his legacy might take a little bit of a hit. Because let's keep this in mind as well. Aaron Rodgers is in pursuit of being able to be in that conversation of greatest quarterback of all time. From a tools perspective, I don't know that we've seen a more talented quarterback in the NFL. Now, there have been quarterbacks that you can argue are greater, Joe Montana and Tom Brady being on that short list. But in terms of just the physical attributes and the football acumen, there are very few quarterbacks that have what Aaron Rodgers brings to the table that have ever played this game. So he deserves to, you know, have an opportunity to be in that class of quarterback. But this, along with, you know, not having multiple championships, is absolutely going to affect his legacy. And that's the thing that's going to be hard for him to work past. Like, if he doesn't get another ring, that's a part of it. But also dealing with this and being on what a lot of folks believe is the wrong side of this in terms of not being forthright when it came to his vaccination status. Like, a lot of people are going to be critical of him for this for a long time. And I think it speaks to the sports character of the player, and that's where he's going to take a big hit with this.
Yeah, the biggest shift in the way we have that conversation will be this and Tom Brady moving to Florida and apparently becoming publicly cool and speaking his mind in ways that he wouldn't in New England. Both of those are going to shift a lot of this discussion. So again, Aaron Rodgers on with Pat McAfee earlier today addressed his comments made last week about the COVID-19 vaccine and more. We'll get to more sound from that as we get through and process it here. But coming up next, all of this has been a big-time distraction inside that same division. It's time we re-look at a quarterback who a lot of people thought shouldn't even see the field, ended up balling last night. We'll get to that after this word from Wendy's. All right, right now at Wendy's, see what all the hype's about with our new guaranteed hot and crispy fries. We're talking real, natural-cut potatoes, perfectly sprinkled in sea salt, and guaranteed to be hot and crispy down to the very last fry, or we'll replace them. These aren't just the typical fries you add to a meal. These are fries worth adding a meal to. Abandon the old, cold, and soggy, and head to Wendy's today, where your fries are guaranteed to be hot and crispy at participating U.S. Wendy's.
At the conclusion of the play, taunting defense number 59. Oh. 15-yard penalty will create a first down.
Oh, that's Marsh. Unbelievable. Marsh makes the play again, just elevated. I didn't see it there.
He starts walking towards the sideline, and he's saying something to the sideline.
Wow.
Wow is right.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. That the sound from our crew on Monday Night Football. Steve Levy on the call with Lewis Riddick and Brian Greasy of Cassius Marsh's taunting penalty that ended up being one of the major plot points at the end of a Monday Night Football game, Chris, that was almost punctuated by a game-winning drive from the rookie Justin Fields in Chicago. Now, the Steelers ultimately go on and win this thing. And, Chris, we are not in the business of moral victories. That generally tends to not apply. But, much like Doctor Strange in Avengers Endgame, when you run the 14 million scenarios, we can find one where maybe we look at it and say, Justin Fields doing what he did last night was the exact thing the doctor ordered for the Chicago Bears.
No question about it. I mean, that fan base today feels like they have hope in the way of finding their future franchise quarterback, the guy they're going to have under center for the next decade plus, right? Like, based on what we have seen from Justin Fields in his rookie years, it's a lot of up and down and more down than up. But last night, especially in that second half, I mean, some of the plays that he made, some of the throws that he made, I mean, that's something for the fans to hold on to, right? It's like that great shot in that round of golf that's just awful. Ooh. Like when you hit that shot and it feels like a tuning fork, how perfect, how sound it is. You know, that's what you got in the second half from Justin Fields and his performance. Like coming out of halftime, he throws that 50-yard bomb to Marquise Goodwin, the one that had to be reviewed. I mean, in the fourth quarter, he layered a throw. The first play of the fourth quarter, layered a throw in the seam to Jimmy Graham between two safeties. The slot fade that he had on third and two on the other side of the two-minute warning. And then, of course, the touchdown that he threw in the red zone to Darnell Mooney when he was on the roof, throw it across his body. Like, all of those throws are big boy throws. And that's exactly why you draft the guy in the top half of the first round, a quarterback. That's why you give away a future first-round draft pick to be able to get a guy that can be a force multiplier, that can come through and make those plays in those types of situations. And I remember listening to the broadcast last night, and Lewis Riddick was making the point early on in that game that the Bears had to win on first and second down because they didn't want to be in third and long. They didn't want to be in situations where they had to be forced to drop back and Justin Fields throw them back in the game. Well, Mike, that's exactly the position that they found themselves in the fourth quarter, down two touchdowns. And guess what happened? Justin Fields damn near won it for him. The Pittsburgh Steelers all time are 2-15-0-2 when leading by 14-plus points in the fourth quarter. And Justin Fields almost was the guy that hung the first L on the Pittsburgh Steelers when they had that kind of lead at home in the fourth. Like, that's how good his performance was in the second half of that game. I mean, it was unbelievable, man. I'm running out of adjectives to describe what he did just because I'm in awe of it. I mean, in terms of a dual threat, when he decides to pull the ball down and run the ball, he looks like a running back. Now, somebody needs to tell him when to get down, especially when Minka Fitzpatrick is out there. But, like, that's the kind of movement skills that he has, coupled with the arm talent. Like, you have the makings of, you know, an elite quarterback. It's just a matter of the coaching staff and the supporting cast being able to develop him and get the most out of him. That still remains to be the big question. But in terms of the tools that you need in order to be a successful quarterback in this league, Justin Fields has that in spades, and it was on full display last night in that game.
Justin Fields was 7 of 12 on throws 15 or more yards down the field including 5 of 8 in that second half. And Chris, you're right. It was all the tools that we had heard about, but coming out of the draft, we had Trey Lance conversations about all the tools there, but they were raw. He hadn't played as much football. Justin Fields had developed a lot more of those. He ran high-level stuff at Ohio State. He competed on the biggest stage college football has to offer. And we saw a lot of that same moxie last night in those situations. Because, Chris, what a novel concept that we talked about some of the struggles he had had so far this season, throwing for more yards in the second half, I believe, than he had thrown in any game so far this season.
Yep.
It's almost like he got better by playing during this year, Chris. Like putting your highly priced rookie quarterback that you traded up to get in the draft out on the field for games to learn and grow actually paid off when you got to a primetime setting.
Well, Gojo, that's what we say all the time on this show, right? Like the only way to get better at football is playing football. And practice is one thing, but you know game speed is a completely different tempo. And until you do it and you have repetitions at it, it's going to be hard to improve. It's going to be hard to realize your full potential. But because he was in that situation last night, because Matt Nagy had to kind of take the reins off because the game flow dictated that, I think you saw more of what the kid can do. Like they dialed up some shots down the field. Like that throw that he had to Marquise Goodwin, that was max protection two-man route. Like why can't we see more of that in your offense? Why can't we get Justin Fields doing more of that? Like this season is not about the Chicago Bears trying to put the guardrails up and trying to win as many games as possible. This year is all about the development of Justin Fields. Like, I get it, Matt Nagy, Ryan Pace, those guys are being on the hot seat. But to me, I'm not necessarily sold that, you know, trying to flirt with the playoffs is the best way for them to save their job. To me, the best way for them to save their job is Justin Fields playing the way that he did in that second half. A second half in which he went 12 of 18 for 228 yards, one touchdown, and a 119 passer rating. I don't know. Is that good, Mike?
New high score. Is that bad? Did I break the game? But, Chris, I think both things can be a part of each other, right? Justin Fields playing like he did last night is going to be the best thing for your football team when it comes to winning games to potentially put you in that playoff race. Like, I do think part of this is going to have to be enough of those kind of results from Matt Nagy and company. Like, we made all the jokes about Matt Nagy being off the sideline last week when Justin Fields had one of his better games, was such a potent rushing threat for them in addition to some of the passing numbers. Matt Nagy was back out there last night. There were some instances, too. You're dealing without Khalil Mack, your best player on defense in that game. You had to rotate bodies in and out on offense in front of Justin Fields on that offensive line at certain times. So they were able to overcome a bunch. But I think ultimately, this is what we said at the start of the year. If you are Matt Nagy and you want to keep your job and have the best chance at winning games, Justin Fields was going to be the only one that was able to overcome those things. Andy Dalton is not making those plays behind this offensive line in this version of this offense, Chris. There's just no way.
No question about it. I mean, Justin Fields has the tools to be able to overcome that offensive line. Hell, he almost had the tools to be able to overcome Tony Corrente and that officiating crew because he had to fight against those guys, too. It almost felt like those guys,
man,
they had Pittsburgh Steelers and they were laying the seven and they were making the calls accordingly. Like, I mean, that's how it felt when I was watching that game, especially with some of the tough breaks that you got in the second half. But yeah, I mean, Justin Fields made it happen. He had that it factor, Mike, and we talk about that with a lot of young players, like, you know, that spark that they can provide a team, and that's what you saw from Justin last night. That's the beauty of the game, man, giving the kid an opportunity to play, taking some chances, you know, taking the training wheels off, and I think that Matt Nagy and that staff discovered some of the things that he can do really, really well, like the throws that he made in the middle of the field to the tight ends, Cole Kmet and Jimmy Graham. Like, I mean, give the kid credit. The velocity that he put on some of those balls and then the touch that he showed with the one to Jimmy Graham first play of the fourth quarter, like that's next level stuff, man. That's graduate level quarterbacking. And so the fact that he's capable of doing that in his rookie years, I think you feel like you need to give him more opportunities to show that. And with every passing game, as he continues to build on his knowledge base, he's also going to build on his confidence. Do you know why? Because he's making plays. Confidence comes from demonstrated performance. And having the outing that he had in the second half, if he continues to work, if they continue to expand the offense, he's only going to get better. So, I mean, that was to me the biggest takeaway in last night's game, even more so than the Pittsburgh Steelers picking up another win.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Insurance is proud to support veterans with its annual Keys to Progress vehicle giveaway program, now celebrating 9 years of donating vehicles and helping veterans in need. Learn more at keystoprogress.com. We want to hear from you, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. But coming up next, Chris mentioned it, the lights weren't too bright for Justin Fields. He went out there and performed despite getting beat up in the pocket with no regard for his safety from these reps. I thought that was going to be the most upset I was with officials from last night's game. But we got to get to the most egregious error that we saw on that field next here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
At the conclusion of the play, taunting defense number 59. Oh. 15-yard penalty will create a first down.
Oh, that's Marsh. Unbelievable. Marsh makes the play again, just elevated. I didn't see it there.
He starts walking towards the sideline, and he's saying something to the sideline.
Wow.
Wow is right.
That's the call from Steve Levy and the gang on Monday Night Football. The taunting penalty heard around the world. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Because, Chris, that game was a very strange flow. The first half was largely lifeless. It was a bit of a rock fight, which is kind of what we expected in a game where you had a dynamic rookie quarterback that's figuring it out on one side and an aging veteran in Ben Roethlisberger on the other side, who has looked his age and then some this season. But the second half hit the gas pedal in a big way until the officials decided to step in. And that taunting call on Cassius Marsh, who looks way too much like Chris Long, by the way. Chris, we got to talk about that, right? Like your fellow who, Chris Long and Cole Beasley, apparently did the fusion dance and came out as Cassius Marsh on the other side.
Yeah, they look like they had a baby together, man. But I don't even want to do my boy Chris Long like that, just because I feel like there are levels to this, and Cassius Marsh seems like he's a gutter type of individual. I'm just going to go ahead and put it out there. But when it came to his post-game commentary about the officials on that taunting call, I thought he was spot on, man. Like, if you have a player that goes out of his way to bump into an official, then you're talking about that player being fined and or suspended. But there were no repercussions, or we don't anticipate there being any kind of discipline toward the ref that decided that he wanted to bump Cassius Marsh as he was trying to run off the field on the way to throwing a flag on him for a personal foul for taunting, where it didn't seem like Cassius Marsh was on the verge of inciting any kind of riot from the Pittsburgh Steelers sideline. Like, I feel like in these situations, context also matters. Like, the time of the game matters. Also, knowing that Cassius Marsh played for the Pittsburgh Steelers once upon a time and knows those guys matters. Like, and the fact that none of that stuff was taken in consideration into making such a pivotal call, like, to me, that's the part that was egregious, man, because you're talking about being able to save 3 points, keeping them off the board. Now, the Steelers end up self-destructing on that drive due to a Bilal Nickel sack and then a holding penalty on top of that, so they only had to settle for three. But, I mean, that was a situation where that drive could have continued because you have a terrible call by an official in a spot that kind of defeats the purpose or the spirit of the rule when it comes to sportsmanship.
Yeah, I mean, the purpose and spirit of the rule, I still have a major problem with here. Like, the notion that taunting in the NFL had gotten so out of hand that we needed to make it a point of emphasis, to me, was laughable. But this instance, you're right, Chris, with all that context, what really happened was Cassius Marsh, who had a game-changing play potentially in this game with that sack of Ben Roethlisberger to force a fourth down and a punt, went over and stared in the general direction of the Steelers sideline, didn't even look like he said anything, and to your point, then got bumped by the referee on the way back over. Here were those comments from Cassius Marsh, the linebacker for the Chicago Bears, after the game talking about this.
I think that that one was just bad timing. It's pretty clear to everybody who saw it that I wasn't taunting. And like, you know, I've been doing the celebration my whole career, and, you know, it's just sad to see stuff like that happen in a close game like that. It's just rough, man. I don't want to say too much because y'all know how it is. But the one thing that I will say is, you know, on my way to the sideline, I got hip checked by the ref and it's pretty clear. If I were to do that to a ref or even touch the ref, you know, we'd get kicked out of the game and possibly suspended and fined. So I just think that that was incredibly inappropriate, and that's all I'll say about that.
And, Chris, this was a physical example of what the – you want to talk about spiritual intent of a rule or the you know, intent of any part of this. An official inserting himself into a situation he need not be. That ended up becoming just as much of the story of the game last night as Justin Fields' near-late game heroics. Those refs were far too a part of this process, both in what they did call in the taunting penalty and what they didn't call in some of the egregious hits on Justin Fields in the pocket of this game. Overall, this officiating effort was laughable in this game, and they should be graded on this, just like anyone else who is a part of playing or coaching in a football game is.
No question about it. And then you also have to consider the integrity of the game, right? Because you got a lot of people now that are engaging in sports gambling, sports betting. Like, that's legalized in a lot of places now. So, like, it's important that the officials get these calls right, you know, as much as they can. And in the instance of what they did last night, Tony Corrente and his crew, just recognizing that you don't need to insert yourself in the game in that fashion at that point, right? Because it wasn't like the game had gotten out of hand, like the refs had lost the control of the game. You're talking about Cassius Marks being halfway point between the numbers and the hash marks, which is about, what, 25 yards away from the Pittsburgh Steelers sideline? I mean, in that position, what is he actually going to do that's going to create some kind of altercation that the officials can't wrap their arms around or get under control? Like, nothing's going to happen. So that's why I didn't understand why he decided to flag him for that. It didn't make any sense to me. And then just beyond that, man, like the referees, they got to realize the fans didn't buy tickets to come watch them throw flags.
Mm-hmm.
They came to watch a football game between two teams that were going at it in a game that became really, really competitive late. That's what the NFL wants. Like Monday Night Football, we got a treat last night in terms of competitiveness from both teams, and it felt like the referees were the show as opposed to allowing the players to steal the show. And that's the problem that I have with all of this. And that's why I think there's got to be some kind of recourse, some kind of discipline when the officials get out of pocket the way that they were last night.
It was incredibly disappointing because you're right. It robbed what was otherwise a really exciting second half and a really exciting finish of some of that moment because the officials decided to insert themselves. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You can get in touch with us on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Goodyear hotline. We see some of you on the phone lines here. We will take your calls and tell you the actual most disappointing statement I saw come out of last night's game. Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We got to start to figure out what the criteria is going to look like because Odell Beckham Jr. going through the waiver process right now, looking to find a new home. We'll see if we've got any hints about where OBJ might end up here coming forward. But we got a lot of you guys on the Dr. Pepper call-in line that we want to get to here. So why don't we start with Daryl in Virginia. Daryl, you're on Canty and Golic Jr. What's going on, man?
Hey, always enjoy the show. I couldn't disagree more with you guys, though, on the late call last night, the taunting. Look, these guys know the rules. It was implemented. I'm sure it was covered. They know the rules. And it's how's it any different than offsides on fourth and one? Dumb mistake. The mistake's on him. The kids do what the pros do.
Well, Daryl, I will say this, and I don't want to cut you off, but offsides is not a subjective call. Like, either you're in the neutral zone or you're not. When it comes to something like taunting, that's left to the discretion of the referee to decide what is and isn't taunting. And in this case, we don't have any evidence that Cassius Marsh was shouting anything at the Pittsburgh Steelers sideline. He didn't have a threatening motion toward the Steelers sideline. He simply got up, made the sack, walked toward their sideline, and stared. And he got between the midway point between the hashes and the numbers, which is about 20 to 25 yards away from the sideline. And then he ran back to his bench. Like, to me, that doesn't constitute a personal foul call on taunting. I don't know that that's necessary. I don't know that those actions rise to that level where we got to give the other team 15 yards and a fresh set of downs. I'm sorry, it doesn't.
No, it has a ridiculously, I think, unequal output on the game. It's got way too big an impact for what we're talking about here, which is a game that is full of emotion. And if we want to do the, man, think about the kids part of this, man, they're seeing worse on TikTok every day. I'm sorry. A guy in the NFL getting up and celebrating a big play ain't going to be the thing that's the most negative impact on a young player and how they act on the field. Let's try Matt in California. Matt, you're on Canty and Golic Jr. What do you got?
Well, hey, man, how many times did J.J. Watt flex and do all kinds of hip thrusts and everything else last night? I mean, it seems to me like everybody's missing the bigger story, which is the fact that that ref obviously had money on the Steelers last night. I mean, they called about 1,000 different penalties on the Bears. They let Fields get his head taken off on 20 different plays. I mean, it seemed to me like there was a vendetta being played out last night.
Well, you know what? I will say, Chris, and we're going to talk a lot about the taunting penalty because everyone hates that rule, and I think rightly so. Although I got to say, man, I was super disappointed. I know he is on the competition committee, but I saw that Mike Tomlin came out and mentioned that he is a fan of the taunting flag, saying we're trying to clean our game up. We understand that people are playing at a lower level, watch us and often mimic us and how we conduct ourselves. Mike T is on the competition committee. I'm sure the Rooneys and the Maras are friends here. Mm-hmm. I refuse to believe that Mike Tomlin actually supports this rule, just for my own sanity.
No, you know he doesn't, but that's the company line, and it just so happened to benefit his team last night. But to me, that wasn't even the most egregious call, Mike. Like, it wasn't. Like, the call against James Daniel at the goal line to wipe out the touchdown throw to Jimmy Graham, like, to me, that was
on
the worst one.
On the low block, you mean?
Yeah, on the low block. But we had the instance late in the second quarter of Minka Fitzpatrick coming in and cut blocking Jason Peters outside of the tackle box. And by rule, the NFL said that that is a foul. That is a foul. Defensive players, offensive players can't do that when you're outside of the tackle box. And yet Minka Fitzpatrick did it to Jason Peters, who also got banged up earlier in that game.
Yep.
The ref kept the flag in the pocket. But when James Daniel did it, and didn't even hit TJ Watt, which is probably the worst part about it.
Yes.
When he did it, they ended up taking a touchdown off the board. You're talking about the difference in the game being 14-6 versus 14-10. How much did the Chicago Bears lose by last night? Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Like, to me, those are the calls that referees can't miss, and there needs to be more accountability, especially with more interest in the game now because of sports gambling.
I completely agree, Chris, and all of those are absolutely appropriate. Those are egregious misses here. Those are much more letter of the law ones, like you talked about. It is viewer discretion when it comes to the officials looking at taunting. The rest of these, we've got very clearly defined terms. The tight end box for these low blocks on the offense. All of these different things that they have. And I can still say this, though, Chris. I think the most egregious thing from an officiating standpoint that I'm concerned about going forward coming out of last night was, are officials going to protect Justin Fields in the pocket? Because what we saw last night were some instances where the Minka Fitzpatrick hit when he scrambled towards the sideline. That's on
Alex Highsmith on the screen pass might have been the worst one, though.
Yes.
That might have been the worst one in the second half. Like, there's no reason why the ref didn't throw the flag. I mean, the guy takes three steps before he hits Justin Fields on the screen. And Justin Fields just lays there, and rightfully so, because he's thinking to myself, what else do I got to do to get a flag call? Like, at some point, you got to throw the flag to try to protect these quarterbacks. You protect all the other quarterbacks, but it just so happens when guys are considered dual threat, you don't protect them, even when they're within the pocket, even in those situations. So, to me, yeah, you're right. Those are egregious calls, and it just doesn't feel right when the officials don't rein some of that stuff in, when we know that the NFL has prioritized protecting all these quarterbacks to the extent that they come up with all of these quarterback-centric protections in the rule book, but to not enforce them on Justin Fields is just wrong.
Yeah, they're worried about taunting. I'm worried about one of the most talented young players in the league being able to be on the field and available week in and week out if he is not protected the way he wasn't last night. We've seen it happen. You mentioned dual-threat quarterbacks. Cam Newton always comes to mind. If you don't go out as officials and set that tone and protect these guys in the pocket, you're going to end up with a star off the field, and that is what the NFL should be guarding against. Coming up next, though, let's talk about a star getting back on the field. Who should be lining up in front to get Odell Beckham Jr.? We tell you next.